Welcome, welcome, welcome to From the Roots Up. My name is Sean Frame. I'm your host, making my triumphant return to radio for the first time in more than 34 years. I gotta say that I never imagined when I did my last radio show on Christmas Eve of 1990 that it would take me this many years to get back on the air, but here we are, and I'm glad to be here. You're probably wondering what I've been doing for the last 34 years. And what can I say? I've lived a life. I started and ran a business for more than 30 years in the video production and media production space. I've been on the school board for 9 years in Placerville. I ran for Congress. I ran for state assembly. And sadly, though I didn't win either of those seats, I did have the opportunity to get out in the world and find things out. You know, if you're a curious person, and I am, I think in any way you want to look at that word, you know, when you encounter things in this life, at least for me, I want to always ask the question, why, how, and you know, a lot of times the answer that I got when I asked those questions was very different from the information I got from all of the other sources I had available, whether it was a newspaper, or later online, or a periodical, or, you know, even the television or radio, other radio shows. You know, I discovered pretty quickly that if I talked to people who really knew what was going on, the story they had to tell, the information they imparted, was vastly different than what I saw anywhere else. And that was really the kernel of the idea for this show. I think I first came up with this show probably over 20 years ago in my mind. The need for somebody to bring a sensible, ground-level point of view to these very complex issues that touch all of us. And I know everybody thinks, you know, especially in the world we live in now, that everything has to be filtered through this binary. Is it left, or is it right, or is it Republican, or is it Democrat, or is it libertarian, or is it socialist? You know, but really, when it comes down to it, for those of us who are out in this world trying to live our lives, it really doesn't matter what filter it comes through. The bottom line is the impact hits us. Let me say that again. Regardless of your political point of view, whatever you might believe ideologically, and we all have some notion of where we stand on these things, the issues themselves will hit you regardless of the angle you're looking at them through. The goal of From the Roots Up is to take these issues and break them down and look at the ways they hit us and also give us the tools to live our lives in this society in a better way. And I think that that is not an ideological point of view that can be filtered through that binary. I think it's just the point of view we all desperately want and need. You know, one of the great things about me running for office was that I really took it seriously. I took every opportunity I had to get out in the world, to talk to experts, but also to talk to just regular old people, just people like myself, regular young people, you know, people different than myself, people whose life experiences are vastly different than mine, and see how these issues played out in their lives. And in doing so, humbly, with my ears open, with a notion that I would take what people said to me seriously, I learned an incredible amount. And I'm going to share some of that learning with you here today, of course, and every week that we're here at From the Roots Up. But, you know, obviously, you know, part of this is a dialogue. I firmly believe that we can get to a better place in our world if we can talk to one another in a way that isn't loaded up with all those binaries, right? With isn't loaded up with you're a socialist and I'm a libertarian, or you're a Democrat and I'm a Republican, or your you know, identity is as a young black female and my identity is a genderqueer, you know, white guy in my 40s. Like, it doesn't matter. Those things inform our decisions. They color our decisions. They show the way these things will play out. But they don't help us get at where we can work together. What is the common space that we share? you know, obviously, I want anybody who's got a different perspective to have a say in how things get fixed. And sometimes things can play out radically different depending on your identity. You know, I'm a middle-aged straight white guy, okay? A cis straight white guy in my 50s. The way I, for example, get healthcare is vastly different, for example, from, say, a young black woman who's a single mom and lives in a different part of the city than I do. May even live very close to me. And yes, there are differences there that we should not forget. But there is a fundamental overarching issue that we probably overlap on 80 to 90%, especially in the area of healthcare. And that's actually going to be our topic of today's show because, you know, I don't want to do anything easy ever. I thought I'd take on one of the most, you know, hot button issues today in healthcare. Later today, we're going to be talking with Dr. William Bronston, who's going to be here to discuss his experience as a doctor and his 50 plus year fight for a system of care in America, not a system of profit, not a system of maximizing profit when people are sick. So that's an incredible conversation to have, somebody who's been sort of trying to make things better, who is a physician, who's seen firsthand the challenges that we all face, and really had to confront it as somebody who is tasked, who has taken the oath of providing care to people. First, do no harm. And so I'm really looking forward to sharing that conversation with you later today. We'll also get into the state of affairs here, some of the downstream impacts of the system that we have. And then we're really going to get into some of the personal aspects of it. I'm going to go into some things that I've experienced in my own life that my family members have experienced. And then finally, you know, we're going to close out this show with something I think I want to do every time, which is not to leave you with a sense of despair about how it is, but to talk to you about the things that we can do right now in the system we have and what we can do to make our system better. And that's where I want to leave you every week. I don't want to leave you in this space of, oh my gosh, we've confronted this horrible issue, this really challenging issue, and I'm sorry, not enough time, we got to go. I'm going to leave you right there, and I'm sorry if that left you in a state of despair. No, I really do hope that every week I will leave you somewhere with something to do so that you can engage these issues in a positive way. And that's when I say from the roots up, we are the roots. This is a show for us. And I am so glad to have you here with me today. If you love live music and want to be up close and personal with the band, there's only one place to go, the Torch Club. This hotspot is the place to be with two shows a day, Wednesday to Sunday. Check out the upcoming shows at torchclub.net or just drop by 904 15th Street in Sacramento. The Torch Club. There's always something happening. We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. All right, welcome back to From the Roots Up. I'm Sean Frame, and let's continue our discussion on healthcare. Let's get into the state of affairs. You know, here are some numbers that I think, you know, kind of tell the story. And these are ones you've probably heard somewhere in the news, although they may not be highlighted in a way that helps you really understand what they mean. But let's start with one that I think is shocking. Here we are in the latest numbers in 2024 basically show that about 27 million Americans are either un or underinsured when it comes to healthcare. Here in California, that number is about 2 million. So, you know, you can extrapolate from there. 18% of our gross domestic product is spent on healthcare, despite 27 million people being uninsured or underinsured. And that's nearly double what the next nation on Earth spends on healthcare. So you would think that, you know, with that kind of expenditure, which is in the trillions of dollars, I think it's about $3.7 trillion a year our nation spends on healthcare services. And we'll get into it later, but maybe it shouldn't even be called healthcare. But nonetheless, 18% of our GDP is being spent on that, around $3.7 trillion. And yet millions and millions of our fellow Americans remain un or underinsured when it comes to health insurance. But you would think still, with that all that expenditure, I mean, the people who are covered must be getting amazing care. No, sorry, I wish that were true. Though we are first in expenditures on the planet, we are 41st in the globe in preventable death, meaning deaths that could have been prevented had there been medical intervention. We are 38th overall in healthcare, and that includes, you know, things like longevity, how long people on average live in our nation, and infant mortality, among other things. So here we are, number one in expenditures, millions and millions, tens of millions of people not getting any coverage or not enough coverage. And we're down, you know, below nations without anywhere close to the wealth that we have to take care of our people. To, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, people ask me all the time, why should I spend money caring for somebody else? And the answer is fundamentally, we all do. So when somebody is uninsured or underinsured in America, a hospital cannot turn them away. They are not allowed to turn them away. And so when people show up, they often show up more sick because they didn't have the money or ability to get care soon. They show up at the emergency room, and that is the most expensive care that can be provided to somebody. And meanwhile, often, you know, when somebody was ill, if they had a contagious illness, they were spreading that illness the entire time they were remained untreated and out in the world. So here's one that really broke me. And I think we've all, if you've lived enough life, you've all known somebody in this situation. 40% of people who have a stage four cancer diagnosis, meaning they're in the, you know, late stages of cancer, end up spending every last bit of their money. They end up completely broke. Let me repeat that. 40% of people who end up with a stage four cancer diagnosis of any kind end up broke. That means you could live your whole life. You could be frugal. You could save. You could invest even. You could build up a life's worth of assets and see them wiped away in a very short period of time. There are very few, if any, other countries on planet Earth where that would happen. What kind of a choice is that? What kind of a nation are we that we allow for that to happen? These are the questions I ask myself every day. And I'd like to actually get back to where, you know, those are the numbers, right? We can see that there is a kind of a crisis brewing here, where more people are un or underinsured. The cost of insurance keeps going up every year to cover some portion of that. Those of us who pay or have an employer paid part or some or part or all of our plan are seeing that, you know, put pressure on how much we can earn, because it's always a balancing act between the cost of healthcare and the amount of money that they put on our check. You know, we see that there's a crisis brewing, but I want to rewind back to the early 90s when I started my business. I was a young man then, and, you know, but I did have the sense of obligation to the folks who worked for my company that they ought to have healthcare. Even though most of us were in our 20s, I still thought, what if somebody gets in a car accident, or what if somebody, you know, goes out and plays roller hockey and breaks their leg, which actually happened to a friend of mine. I thought, you know, if I'm going to run a business, folks ought to be insured. And so I provided health insurance for all my employees, full premium paid at that time. But I didn't know as a 20-something the first thing about buying health insurance. You know, I didn't know how to look at plans, compare plans, see what coverages were. I just knew, like, well, this is about how much I can afford. And we're all young and healthy. And, you know, we just got to have something in place in case something happens. Not long after that, one of my employees, who was also a good friend of mine, took ill and had to take an emergency ambulance ride to the hospital and to the emergency room at night. And when he did so, he ended up getting stuck with a very large bill over and above what the insurance would cover. And I couldn't believe that we had insurance, but that it wouldn't cover many of the things that he needed. And it was from that point on that I really had decided I had to learn how it worked. I had to do the best about figuring out good plans to offer my employees. And I had to do my best to balance the needs of health insurance costs versus how much money they needed to live, how much money they needed on their check. And I realized then that we had a system that really was terrible for small businesses. And the reason was pretty simple. It's just math. If you are a small business owner, your income is going to fluctuate from year to year. And sometimes it's going to fluctuate wildly. Well, you know, your big expenses really as an employer are your taxes of various kinds and then your health insurance if you're providing that to your employees. And so what I found over time was that my health insurance just went up every year, some percentage, somewhere between 5 and 25% every year. The premiums went up, independent of whether my income as a business owner went up or if our business income went up. My healthcare costs always went up. That started actually putting pressure on the number of people I could employ. You know what didn't go up every year was my taxes because they stayed in lockstep with my income. So if my income went down, my taxes went down. If my income went up, my taxes went up. And it was fairly predictable. I could see based on the income for the year what my tax burden would be. What I could never predict as a small business owner was how much my cost of health insurance was going to increase every year. And it keeps people from wanting to start a small business. If you work somewhere and you've got a great idea for a business and you'd love to start it, the first thing you've got to figure out is, how am I going to insure myself? And even more so if you have a family, right? Health insurance costs are the number one thing that kills small business. So when you hear people talk about this issue as if it's some kind of radical socialist agenda, just remember that the system we have is a drain on our economy. It's a drain another way, too. It's a drain on large businesses. Do you know why? Well, multinational corporations, particularly, you know, big manufacturers like, you know, our car companies, et cetera, who employ people in America, have to pay health insurance on top of the money that they pay in salary. No other nation on earth requires their businesses to be doing that. That is a huge competitive disadvantage for our companies and one that we ought to be considering how to fix. I'm going to take a little break here because I think I've given you a lot. But when I come back, I'm going to give you a little bit about my personal story, some things I've experienced anecdotally in my life, and I'm going to get into the interview with Dr. William Bronston. So we'll be right back. From the Roots Up is brought to you by the Six Pack. Crack open some change and support the candidates and causes we need in these times. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. This episode of From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Torch Club, Sacramento's premier live music venue every Wednesday to Sunday. Check them out at 904 15th Street in Sacramento or online at torchclub.net. Okay, we're back and continuing our conversation about healthcare. We've talked a lot about the state of affairs, the downstream impacts of the system we have. But let's talk a little bit about how it breaks down at the individual level. I'm going to give you a story about myself. I'm going to violate my own personal HIPAA here and just say that at one point in my life, because I'm fair skinned, I saw a mole develop on my left arm. And that mole to me didn't look right. I was in my 40s and I thought, you know, I should probably get that checked out. And I went to see my primary care physician. My physician took a look at it and he said, you know what? I wouldn't worry about it, Sean. It's probably nothing. And I said, well, you know, why don't we go to a dermatologist? No, I'm serious, Sean. Like, you know, don't worry about it. That's nothing. You're just, you know, you're worrying about nothing. And after, you know, a back and forth many times, I finally got the referral to the, quote, single lesion clinic, which was a visit with a dermatologist, but that they could only look at the one lesion that I wanted them to check out, nothing else. So if they were looking past that and they saw something further down my arm or on my hand, they couldn't look at that. It was only to look at that one lesion. And I reluctantly agreed to that plan, and I tried to make an appointment. 3 months later, I finally got an appointment with a dermatologist. And when she took a look at it, the color came out of her face. She was looking at it with a jeweler's loop. And she said, how long have you had this, Sean? And I said, well, it's been a few months. By the time I got my primary care physician appointment and then the 3 months it took me to see you, yeah, it's been a few months. And she said, I'm taking it off right now. I'm going to biopsy it, and I'm pretty sure you have melanoma. And that's where we left it. I went home with a big gash in my arm. They took a lot of extra flesh to make sure they would take any cancer out if there was any. And then I left, and it turned out I had melanoma. And yes, I'm so glad they caught it. It was stage one. It hadn't spread. But had I not argued for my own health, I would have ended up with melanoma, which at this stage of the game is pretty much a death sentence. So, you know, that really gave me a lot of concern about what the drivers are. Why would my primary care physician spend so much effort trying to keep me from seeing a specialist? You know, how does that jive with the oath, first do no harm? What harm was being done by sending me to a specialist and getting it checked out? The harm was financial. Let's be clear. Their incentive structure, what they were doing, essentially was denying me care, talking me out of care to save money. That's disgusting, in my opinion. And it shouldn't ever, ever happen in any just society. Next up, my own mother, sadly no longer with us, who late in her life had congestive heart failure. And, you know, for those of you who understand that, I don't want to get into all the particulars of what it is and what it means, but basically it's kind of a downward spiral, right? Your heart's ability to do its job of circulating blood and oxygen throughout your body is gradually diminishing. And at some point it can no longer do things like help clear your lungs. And so, you know, you will start having lots of things, maladies that come from that situation. And when my mother was diagnosed with that, we knew that she had some limited amount of time left. But what we didn't know was how that was going to play out. And the way it played out in the system we have now, you know, she was on Medicare, but she also had an additional private insurance coverage. And it was her Medicare was administered by the private insurance coverage. It played out like this. She would go into the hospital. They would try and quickly as possible, get her stabilized so that they could move her from the hospital facility with quality care and doctors right there and, you know, registered nurses to a skilled nursing facility, which is a building somewhere else run by a private for-profit company who is there generally speaking, one nurse for 200 patients and a few other various levels of medical technicians who are not registered nurses, providing a majority of the care. Now, I didn't know the first thing about, I had never heard the term skilled nursing facility or the acronym SNF, which is what people will call them. Oh, you sent your mom to a SNF. But I learned pretty quickly what it meant. And what it meant was she was going to go to a facility that where she was only going to get care as much as somebody was there to advocate for her. She couldn't advocate well for herself because she was sick. So whether it had to be myself or my sister or my stepfather, somebody had to be in that room advocating for her care. think to yourself how many people, particularly seniors, you know, who have been forced into this exact situation. Now, my mom, went through this hospital to skilled nursing facility to home to hospital to skilled nursing facility to home scenario multiple times. And over that, those times we got to see up close a good cross section of what the skilled nursing facilities were like in the area where she lived. She went to almost all of them at one time or another because it was always based on which one had a bed available for her when they wanted to push her out of the hospital. And when I say push her out of the hospital, I mean, I'm not joking. Like sometimes they would wait until 1 or 2 in the morning when they knew that I wouldn't be there, or my sister wouldn't be there, or my stepdad wouldn't be there, and then talk her into signing the papers and then move her in the middle of the night. How does that sound for care? Is that care being provided there? Are they thinking about what's best for my mother at that moment? Absolutely not. They were thinking about what was best for their bottom line. At one point, I even asked one of the doctors, have you been to this skilled nursing facility that you so highly recommend to us? Have you ever gone and visited and seen patients there? And she said no. And I said, I think you should do that. Because frankly, the level of care was breathtakingly low, and even more so for those who didn't have folks to advocate for them. In fact, if you didn't have somebody to advocate for you, I would hazard a guess that you got very little care and probably died in relatively short order in one of those facilities. People probably die in those facilities all the time because they have nobody to advocate for them. Again, this is a part of the system that is as it is designed. This is not an accident. This is an accountant somewhere at an insurance or hospital or both making decisions about what happens to people based on how much money it will accrue to their bottom line. Many of these businesses profess to be nonprofits, and yet their CEOs often make over $10 million a year. So tell me if that's not for profit, if there's that much profit left over that they can pay their senior executives in the millions and millions of dollars. So up next, I've got Dr. William Bronston, who has been fighting this fight against institutional America, against the notion that people should just be pushed off somewhere and warehoused until they die for more than 50 years. I can't wait to share this interview with you, and we'll be back with that in just a moment. If you love live music and want to be up close and personal with the band, there's only one place to go, the Torch Club. This hotspot is the place to be with 2 shows a day, Wednesday to Sunday. Check out the upcoming shows at torchclub.net or just drop by 904 15th Street in Sacramento. The Torch Club. There's always something happening. We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
I'm here with Dr. William Bronston, author of Public Hostage, Public Ransom, Ending Institutional America, somebody who's also deeply involved in Physicians for National Health Program, and then also the California Lifetime Care Health Act, among many other things. I want to welcome you here with us today, Bill. Appreciate you coming.
Thank you so much. It's really an honor.
Your book is a tour de force. While I was reading it, I was struck by how relevant the discussion is in that book today. First off, tell me about how your experiences in Willowbrook shaped you as a physician. And then maybe let's draw out how your experiences there got you to the ransom portion of the book and the broader conclusions you have about our system of providing care to folks in the United States.
A broad question, Sean. So I'm going to go at it in little pieces and you'll kind of guide me. Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, I was trained through my medical school experience and into my internship by the head of the Child Development Department at Children's Hospital of Los Angeles, who ran a clinic down in the basement for families that had kids with suspected developmental delay. And the reason he did that and the way he did that was to deflect people from institutional terminus. He was very clear that the way in which mental retardation was seen and treated by the medical community really was so inhumane and so antithetical to their growth and development and the well-being of the families, who essentially were told by most doctors, put your kid away, have another one, and forget about this one. I mean, that literally was where doctors were essentially counseling families if they had a kid that was different in any particular way. And so I applied to Willowbrook State School, where, you know, I at least I knew what the field was like, what the clientele was like, what the resident population was like. And so I wound up getting the job, and I'm a very well trained doctor. And so I was put into a building in charge of four wards of 50 human beings, each children, each 200 people. And, the records were absolutely opaque of any kind of specific information. The medical practices were literally awful. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how anti-professional, anti-scientific, anti-humane, they were just awful. And I began to try and practice good medicine. And the first thing I had to deal with was just the material circumstances of the fact there was inadequate food, inadequate clothing, and no programming. People never got outside. They laid around all day long on stone floors and mats, you know, and got contractures because there was no rehab going on there, and began little by little to learn about the political, organizational, and professional evil that essentially ran that place. So people,
when you started getting a look at all that stuff, I mean, how did it feel to you, even though you were so, you know, you weren't totally unaware of what you were walking into, but I mean, it must have been breathtaking when you really saw the scope of it.
It took me about a year to really figure out what I was dealing with there. But people, your audience cannot really imagine what it's like if they were essentially assigned, committed to a segregated, congregate, empty facility at age 3 or 4 to die there, no matter how long they lived. And so what happened was that Medicaid essentially became the funding source to the state of New York in order to cover the cost of providing services. But if Medicaid paid $200 or $300 a day per person, the state spent about $20 or $30 a day to feed, clothe, and essentially manage that population until they died. So every minute, every day, every week, every month of living with nothingness but crowding, screaming, echoing noise, fetid, disease, you know, kind of everywhere, you know, it was like jungle diseases that I had only learned about in medical school in theory were actually, you know, actively infecting the youngsters in my program.
Was this the first time you really began to understand the monetization or commodification human beings caught in this system? I mean, prior to that, I don't think you could have imagined it, right?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
So, You've seen all this, and I guess, you know, it's not too difficult for people who've been around a little bit to understand or to imagine how our system fails our most vulnerable folks. But how do you feel like, you know, from your experiences, this, you obviously, you took it to the next level and you extrapolated, well, if it's happening here and this institutionalization and commodification of folks is happening in this environment, what does it mean to the rest of us out in the, you know, the folks just go waking up every day and going to work and trying to live their life and stay healthy. And in this society that we're living in, I mean, you know, what was the transition from, you know, to the ransom portion and your, you know, where you've gone from there for you?
Interesting, because when I was in training, I was acutely aware that I didn't want to wind up in a nursing home as I got older. And that's always been an awareness, a gnawing awareness on my part. And the thing that your listeners are probably not thinking about or experiencing is that as they age, they will be put into segregated congregate facilities, because that's pretty much what Medicaid funds. Medicaid funds nursing homes, supported living, hospice care, and the like. And so our morbidity and mortality statistics in the United States place us 41st in the world of premature death and illness. And so one of the things that I wanted to try and do, first of all, was to provide a document, a manual that would help individuals working in human service institutions to fight back against the iniquities, the abuses, the criminal actions that were taken against people. And secondly, to alert the general population that we all are headed towards our own Willowbrooks at the end of our lives, and that we have to change the system radically away from illness-based tertiary care, which is focusing medical services on the far end of illness, which is the most lucrative part of medical practice, and establish the public health system as the dominant administrative directorial profession that essentially emphasizes prevention, early intervention, and what all. So the book essentially starts with the story of the Willowbrook debacle, and then the arc of the story leads you to the need for what we call single-payer healthcare, which means that we would move from our current medical market system to a population-based healthcare system that provided comprehensive, tax-based services to every single individual in our society and deflects people away from Medicaid-funded long-term care to lifetime care. We don't have a healthcare system now. We have a medical market system that essentially is run by the three major cartels: insurance, hospital, and pharma. And pharmaceuticals. That's exactly right. So to get an appointment now with a specialist, to see a doctor, to get a clear answer about something, to get properly taken care of, and to not be stripped of all your money is rare, and getting harder and harder and harder, as more than 70% of the current nursing home industry has been privatized and is being now owned by private equity corporations at Wall Street in order to make money, not to take care of people, make money. Everybody listening to this show has got a nightmare tale to tell about somebody in their family that has been essentially treated in this dehumanizing, monetized way that essentially has shortened their lives and essentially made them miserable. I mean, it's so awful that how to ring the bell or to turn on the siren to awaken the general population in California to demand, not through their elected officials who are in large part corrupted by cartel money, but to go for a proposition in California that would establish universal, rightful, population-based services, which would save everybody starting at $2,000 a year, minimum, and immediately eliminate $1 trillion worth of expenses that we are spending in California with the current medical market system.
I love everything that you said there. And I just got to add that I love that you use the word cartels, because it captures the actual violence of the system as it exists now. You know, that the violent monetization of the system against the people who are supposed to be getting care.
They're global. They're massively wealthy. And look, the guy that got shot down the other day, his income was $10.2 million a year. And nobody raised the question of how many people he was responsible for passively murdering, apart from the fact that he got shot in the back and killed by a bullet. But the fact is that as the head of United Health, that guy was responsible for thousands of unnecessary premature deaths because of the policies of that insurance industry. But that guy and his peers were not put in jail for murder. Who is now going to be put on trial is a kid who pulled the trigger on a gun to kill a guy who was a mass murderer and his peers in the industry. The insurance industry CEOs that are all making more than $6 to $8 to $10 million a year and essentially depriving us of essential rightful care and services to maintain a sense of well-being, security, and comfort and nurture.
Yeah, and I'll just say, you know, obviously, I don't support people getting murdered. I doubt you do.
But no, of course not.
Yeah, but
I don't support him murdering. How do we get a guy that's responsible for killing so many under our efforts in order to have accountability for murder? This guy's a murderer. The guy that got shot is a mass murderer, as are his multi-million dollar CEO peers in the pharmaceutical and insurance cartels.
So, Bill, you know, it's very clear to me the passion and everything that you bring to this topic and how much you genuinely care about other human beings. There are many doctors who don't feel the same way as you do. You know, the nurses have kind of led the way in trying to get legislative accomplishments in the state. But the California Medical Association, as far as the last time I looked, they don't support a single payer system.
They're against it.
How do they reconcile that position with the oaths they've taken as a physician to help people?
I'm pausing here because I want that question to resonate with your listeners. In ourhealth.pub, in my website, I essentially require that every post-secondary school provide tuition-free education for all health professional training, social work, psychology, nursing, medicine, dentistry, med tech, all of that stuff. So that, first of all, we begin to develop a transformation from white, male, upper middle class to a universal diversity population of caregivers that identify with the people they're taking care of. The fact is that the doctors have been essentially allowed a role in society far and away from the role that they should be playing as caregivers. We are rarely caregivers as much as high-level paid professionals. We're mostly white. We're mostly white-haired. And there's a certain hardness and a certain callousness to the general population. That is certainly the case with the AMA that's interested in privilege and benefits, as well as the California Medical Association. It's interesting that it's the women. It's the California Nurses Association that's driving the health justice campaign in the state. Doctors will not ever, ever transform the medical system that essentially pays them $200,000 to $400,000 on average a person. And they'll bemoan, and we ask them about single payer. The first thing that they talk about is, what's this going to cost me? What am I going to get paid under those circumstances? Which is absolutely outrageous, outrageous. The question is, how are the people going to be healthy and well and contribute to the economy of the society?
I want to get back to the care thing too, because you know, there's a fight going on. The Republicans literally put a bill in Congress to repeal the $35 limit on the cost of insulin for people who receive Medicare and Medicaid. And so, you know, this goes back to the story I was telling earlier. I didn't, you know, it wasn't part of the conversation that we've had here, but You know, when I was campaigning for Congress, and I went down to visit to do an appearance down in Tuolumne County, and a friend of mine didn't show up. And when I called her afterwards, I said, you know, what's happened? I was hoping to see you tonight. It's been a while. And she said, look, I would have loved to have been there, but I was in the hospital. And at first I was concerned that something had happened to her. However, you know, she said, no, it's not me. I'm fine. But my friend was rationing insulin. And at that time, I had never heard of that before. And every room I brought it up, this story up in from then on, I saw knowing looks telling me that people either knew somebody who was rationing insulin or had done so themselves.
It's wonderful.
How on earth is that care? You can't call that care.
It amazes me that people are so scared of going against this kind of injustice. If we put in a universal healthcare system in America, it would be the best system on earth, because it would not model on anything else that's less than what we could ideally afford and make happen. And we can afford anything. The money is there. The savings are there. The need is overwhelmingly there.
The desire is there. I saw it in those rooms I spoke to. We certainly saw it recently with what happened to the United Healthcare CEO. I mean, if you were out in the world and talking to people or on social media, you know, what you heard over and over and over again was that people were not shocked. They were not shocked by what happened. In fact, once people were given permission to talk about it, suddenly they started talking about all these stories that they have. We all have. You can't live here without having these stories. If I asked anybody, tell me a story about somebody who was harmed by the system we have, they've got a dozen. They're like, what kind of story do you want to hear?
Stop talking about healthcare in what we have here. We have a medical market system. And anytime people talk about what's going on, they got to use that terminology in order to be clear in their head of what they're talking about. In my model, in the model that was put together by my 40 friends, ourhealth.pub, all that is laid out in detail. What I would suggest people do is they go to the website, ourhealth.pub, and they go to the drop-down screen that says resources. And they look at the books that are listed there, and they get two or three or four of them, because any two or three or four of them, they're brilliant. Those are the very best books in writing about what a true healthcare system has to be and must be.
Well, Dr. William Bronston, Bill, author of Public Hostage, Public Ransom, Ending Institutional America, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sean, and please stay in touch and let's keep working on this. This is really the most important thing in our lives.
This episode of From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Torch Club, Sacramento's premier live music venue, every Wednesday to Sunday. Check them out at 904 15th Street in Sacramento or online at torchclub.net. From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Six Pack. Crack open some change and support the candidates and causes we need in these times. Paid for by The Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. All right, we're back. What an interview, right? Isn't that guy amazing? What I want to do now is transition to what I want to do every show, which is to not leave you in this place of how dark things are, how dark they can be, but with what can I do? This isn't about ideology. It's about what can we do for ourselves and our families in the system we have, and then what can we do to make the system better? So let's start with what we can do in our current system. Well, the first thing that you ought to do every year is check your policy when it's open enrollment. Make sure the maximum out-of-pocket numbers and other key areas haven't changed. Just take a look at it. Make sure that it's what you thought it was, that it's going to have the coverages you need in the year going forward. Let's say you've recently gotten a diagnosis that says you're going to need some surgery or something else. Would you then, knowing that, consider changing your policy? Right now, under the Affordable Care Act, you cannot be denied coverage based on pre-existing conditions. So as long as that exists, make sure that the coverage going into the next year will be sufficient for the healthcare needs that you anticipate. If you get your insurance through your employer and they don't fully cover your family members and premiums, if you have more than yourself that you're covering on your plan, it might be advantageous to put your non-working family members into the ACA exchange and only take the single coverage at work. So that's kind of a math problem, right? You can go to the ACA exchange and see what it would cost. See, first of all, if your partner or your children would be eligible for getting premium subsidies through the exchange. And if they are, what their coverage would cost to get something close to what they would have with your employer plan. If the amount, if they qualify and the amount is less than what you would pay your employer, just take the single coverage and sign them up through the ACA exchange. You can save hundreds of dollars a month by doing that. That's money that's back in your family's budget for just about anything else you would need it for. So something you can definitely do in our current system that can really make a huge impact on your finance and still make sure that all your family members have the healthcare, the health coverage that they need. When you're at the doctor's office, always ask about the insurance approval process for anything you're going to have done that they recommend you having done, and work with your doctor's office to get the approvals before getting anything done. And I'm just going to give you a little, you know, pro tip here. Get to know the folks who work in the doctor's office on a first name basis. Be kind to them, because these folks are going to be your advocates with your for-profit insurance company. They're the folks who can really help make or break what your healthcare looks like. If you're in a closed system where your insurance and your physicians are from the same company, then you must advocate for your care. You know, like in the case of my melanoma earlier, you know, had I not advocated for my care, I wouldn't be here talking with you today, because I would have not gotten my melanoma diagnosed. And when it grew large enough that it metastasized, there would have been no treatment that would have saved my life. So you have to advocate for yourself. Don't take no for an answer. Demand that they push for a diagnosis, whatever that takes. If that means labs, if that means x-rays, if that means an MRI, if it means a CT scan, fight, fight, fight until you get the treatment that you need. Fight in the kindest way you can. Try and understand your doctor and what they may be incented to do by their employer. But do not take no for an answer. I'm just trying to give you some advice that could help you. Obviously, I'm not an attorney. I'm not a healthcare professional. I am not an insurance company executive. So, you know, obviously, you're going to want to check with the professionals in your life if you've got questions that are related directly to your personal finances and situation. But still, I think this is all just broad advice that you could take in, you know, without too much difficulty. So let's talk about how we could make this system better. Well, first of all, when you do encounter politicians and you see people running and you're thinking, I don't know, that person seems like they might be a great person to represent me at the state or federal level, demand some things from them. I mean, they want your vote, they want your money. So demand support for single-payer healthcare as a condition of supporting any candidate for office. Get involved with groups like Healthcare for All or the National Nurses Union or the California equivalent like the California Nurses Association. The nurses have been leading the way on single-payer healthcare in California, on reforming a system, trying to get actual care to folks in our state. And so you know, go out and look for CalCare, for example, which is the effort that's put together by the California Nurses Association, or Healthcare for All. See if there's a local chapter in your area. And if not, consider getting a few friends together and creating a local chapter. It's really actually pretty easy to do. So have these conversations. Organize them yourself. Just have a few people over, have some tea, some cookies, and talk about it. And what you'll find is that you will get a small coalition together, and that coalition will grow. People will come, new people will show up. And this is how we're going to get to the critical mass that we need for change. And I guess what I'd like to leave us all here with today as we wrap up the show is that, as Dr. William Bronston said, and I've heard others say it too, everything is impossible until the moment it isn't. We have the power to make that moment. Let's make that moment happen together. Thank you for being with me this week on From the Roots Up. I hope you'll join me every week as we delve into a topic like this, and I hope you'll engage me in a conversation. If you want to reach out to us, send an email to fromtherootsupshow@gmail.com.
when I think that South Paradise was right.